My name's James Beatty.
And I'm Sean Carroll.
And welcome to the Rebuild Health and Fitness podcast, where we help you build your health and fitness.
Right, and welcome to the next episode of the Rebuild Health and Fitness podcast. And today we have Mike Catriss. So Mike is a strength and conditioning coach, head programmer at the Athlete Program, nutritionist at Kratos Nutrition, which he owns. So obviously he's an entrepreneur, but he's done all of them things while becoming one of the fittest men in the UK and Europe, winning titles like Battle of the Beasts, Rep It Out. And Mike and his team have competed at regionals in 2015 and the European regionals in 2018 before booking their place to the CrossFit Games this year, which is fucking highly exciting. So Mike is clearly a passionate and resilient human being, and he's from Wales, which makes him jump up the ladder of being an excellent person, you know? So Mike, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much for having me.
So let's take it back before Sean jumps in, because I know Sean is very excited. So just tell us a little bit about yourself.
I guess the easiest thing is I was a typical Welsh rugby boy, really. Growing up, played every sport and I could get my hands on, anything that kept me out of school or kept me sort of busy, just enjoyed sport in general. But rugby was my real passion. Rugby and boxing were my two sort of real passions growing up. I was lucky enough to sort of represent city, county, countries, and in both of those sports growing up. And when I was 19, signed my first sort of professional, semi-professional contract as a rugby player, and that was always the goal, right? That's what I wanted to do. And got a little injury. I think Sean might have been about when it happened, or he wouldn't have been far away when it happened. I had a double eye socket fracture playing against Ebervale.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then got up and carried on playing like a trooper, finished the game, obviously. Next day I looked like bloody Quasimodo. And then that happened to be my third or fourth concussion that season. And back in those days, they didn't really give a shit too much. It was like, how many fingers am I holding up? Who are we playing against? What's the score? And yeah, you're good to go. But that one was the one that sort of finished me off. Neurologist sort of said, I think it's time for you to have a look elsewhere, or you're going to have 18 months off at least before we let you lace back up. And I was like, right. What next? So I had a gym at the time, where we were doing some CrossFit, but I wasn't actively doing CrossFit. I was just sort of there and around the scene. I wasn't allowed to lift anything heavy because of the pressure behind my eye. And I was like, well, these guys aren't lifting anything heavy. It doesn't look too bad. Looks like a bit of fun. I'll give that a go. And, I got my ass handed to me and I was like, yeah, cool. This is what I want to do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, mate. Again, thank you for jumping on the podcast. I think a little bit of a backstory from how I know you, and probably, you know, it was probably on reflection, I didn't realize how much of an impact you've had on the trajectory of like my career and then on everyone else's lives. Like, so you've had a pretty, yeah, like I said, pretty big impact on mine, and then yeah, by extension, the members of my gym now. So I met Mike back in, would have been 2011. 2011. So yeah, nearly 10 years. Cannot going on 10 years. I went over to Wales to play footy as a 19-year-old, and Mike was one of the first blokes I met at my club, Glamorgan Wanderers. Still speak to a lot of those boys today. They're all like really, really good lads. Took on, for a young kid heading over, I couldn't have asked to go for a more welcoming environment. One of my first memories of you was, I think you picked me up for a gym session to go to, I think it was Dragon CrossFit at the time. Yeah. Pick me up outside the Roth Blockbuster in your Beamer. You gave me some Kratos nutrition kit as well. I was like, oh, he's all right. And then as we sort of progressed through that season, I think, yeah, that's where you busted your face. Nice to see it's nearly healed.
One day.
And then in that sort of second season, I think you were sort of leading some of the strength and conditioning for us. And that's where sort of introduced again that sort of first gave me my first taste of CrossFit. And then I won't go into the long-winded side of things, but as I came back to Australia after getting busted, you know, it sort of lit that spark in me to open my own CrossFit gym. And at the time, like, you offered so much guidance around like the programming side of things, just some best practices as sort of kept in touch and followed your journey and saw you progress into Ion and do things with Dragon. So yeah.
The butterfly effect.
Butterfly effect. Like we wouldn't be here now 10 years on, having helped thousands of people, going to help thousands more without sort of your influence. So I think that's always something pretty fucking cool that, you know, you don't always realize the effect you have on people by just being a good, helpful person with good intentions. So yeah, from everyone at Rebuild, thank you, Mike.
I mean, it's an absolute pleasure. It's always like you say, and you'll have this a lot. You'll have your own stories where of people you've helped and people you've impacted along the way. And I've been lucky enough to work with some pretty cool individuals that have gone on to do some pretty cool things. And it's always nice to hear that you've had an impact, a positive impact on somebody that has gone on to do so much more and then pay it forward and have positive impacts on other people. So I know what, you know, we keep in touch quite a lot and often, you know, thrash things out about programming, about what's going on in the scene and all that sort of stuff. And see the stuff you guys are doing is awesome. And it's like to have played like a much more minor part than what Sean's bigging me up to, I'm sure. But like, it's nice to have even played a small part in that. So it's, it's an absolute pleasure, mate.
I think ever since I came in with him, he speaks fairly highly of you. And then every time I look on your profile, I feel a little bit negative about myself. I'm like, you know, this guy's beautiful. He's
got all filters, mate. It's all filters.
I was like, look how jacked he is. I was like, you know, I broke before I could get through this much volume with CrossFit. You know, so
yeah, I think that's an excellent segue into how have you lasted this long? Like CrossFit, like it's changed a lot over the last sort of decade. Like, and I know you've had a few setbacks with a few like niggling injuries that, oh, not even niggling. There were some pretty like major ones with your foot that kept you beat up for a while. Yeah, how have things changed for you training-wise over the years? What were your sort of influences around your training and programming?
Yeah, I suppose like early 2012, like that season, the 2011-2012 season was when I sort of threw myself whole hog into CrossFit and decided that's what I wanted to do and wanted to compete. And I put myself out on the circuit and competed a fair bit in 2012-2013. I managed to get pretty good, pretty quick. I was lucky. Like I was pretty fit. I always took pride in my training as a rugby player. Like that was one of my better things, was my sort of strength and conditioning sort of side of things. So I went into CrossFit back then and people that are sort of listening to this that are relatively new to CrossFit wouldn't believe the things we've seen from back in the day when it all first started. But I was probably one of the strongest things around in CrossFit then, because most of them came from conditioning backgrounds, from Ironman or marathon running or whatever. There wasn't very many people that came from power sports. So the first time I ever snatched a barbell, I snatched 95 kilos, literally. Like I'd never done a snatch before. Like I muscle cleaned 130 odd kilos. Like these are numbers that I'd be happy to do now.
Yeah.
But like then I was 108 kilos, just finished playing rugby. So the strength thing was never a problem for me. I just had to learn how to do gymnastics. I had to learn how to pace myself in workouts. I had to get some sort of aerobic capacity and some metabolic conditioning under my belt and all that other fun stuff. So I threw myself into programming really early and became a real geek about it, and just trial and error, just tried everything under the sun in terms of when Le531s and strength work and, you know, lactate threshold work and aerobic capacity work. And, you know, back then, again, hard for some people to sort of fathom now, but there weren't all these different courses. There was your CrossFit level one. And that was pretty much it. There wasn't gymnastics coaches around. There wasn't weightlifting coaches around. Like I learned to snatch by watching videos on YouTube of John North smashing a barbell out as far away as he could and arching it over his head and be like, this is how you snatch.
Yeah.
And like, I'm still trying to unfuck that now.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, you don't go and get to get weightlifting coaches' hands on you and all that other stuff. So yeah, it was definitely like a long-winded approach and a lot of trial and error, and probably more error than trial, leading through all of that. But I was lucky enough to get relatively decent on the UK scene. And in 2014, I was probably on track for qualifying as an individual for regionals that year. And I came like 11th in the first open workout in Europe. And the second one was chest to bars and overhead squats. And I stupidly, Andy, who was our conditioning coach the first year, I was at Glamorgan Wanderers with Sean. He left a plate out where he was jumping up from a plate to grab the pull-up bar so he could do faster transitions. And I just said, yeah, leave it there, that's fine. And I came down off the pull-up bar and I landed my ankle on the edge of the plate and my shin bone hit the floor. And I snapped pretty much every ligament in my ankle. And that caused a massive cascade of issues that I still struggle with now. But basically, I haven't got a spring ligament in my left foot. I haven't got an ATFL in my left foot. And a couple of issues that I really had to work hard on along the way. So I wouldn't say that I got a CrossFit injury. I'd say I got a dickhead injury. It was like I landed on a plate. It could have happened to anyone doing anything. And in terms of like my body, it's, as long as you've been clever and realizing that you don't get good by doing more and more and harder, like it's just training smarter and more is not better. Better is better.
Yeah.
I've not really been too bad in terms of the body and the injuries. And like the reason that I've stayed motivated and enjoyed it so much is because I love training, but also the fact that there's always something to get better at. So you can plateau in something in CrossFit. So I struggle with strength work and I'm not hitting those numbers. Cool. I'm just going to go work on my gymnastics or my swimming or my running and get that better until I'm ready to get some improvements elsewhere. You know?
And that's the good thing about CrossFit. It is so broad and you need to be so good at so many different modalities. So if you are, like I said, you are struggling one, there's another 10 things that you can look at to keep your mindset and discipline in a pretty good place. But like what you said then, I remember, I don't know when I started, probably about eight years ago, maybe, you know, where it was, we did a program called Raw Strength and Conditioning here with Rob D, you know, good programmer, but it was like 4 hours a day, you know, on average. Then you'd have your split days. And I'll be honest, it was the most,
it was fun.
It was the best training I've ever done. Even if I think back to this day now, like a group of us just trying to be as good as we can at this. And there was so much volume, so much intensity, so much time, you know, we were PTs and things at the time, so we could just put ourselves into it. But obviously people like myself, people like Sean have died off and gone into a different side of programming where, you know, my training now will probably last an hour and that's enough for me. How much training do you still need to do to be as good as what you are at this? Like how much volume do you need time?
Yeah, I mean, I sold my gym back in January last year because I was doing a lot of online stuff with the athlete program and Kraus, and I was of the mindset before COVID came around, it was like 2 months before then, that I wanted to be able to be completely mobile with what I do. So if I wanted to go to Bali or Australia or wherever, I could do my job from there. And I didn't want to be stuck to a single place. And at the time, super teams were allowed. You didn't have to be required to all train out of one gym. You didn't all have to be within 100 miles of anything. So that was kind of my plan, and COVID scuppered that. And then they changed the rules in terms of the setup and everything as well. So part of that plan was that I wanted to have a good push and increase the amount of time that I dedicated to getting better. So you guys will know that owning a gym is, people think, oh, it's amazing, you can train whenever you want and you can train as much as you want. Like I trained less owning a gym than I did when I didn't own a gym, because you're constantly doing stuff. You feel guilty for training. If you get in a session, it might well be interrupted because you've got to go and change the toilet paper, or you've got somebody asking you for some advice on something, you can't tell them to fuck off because they want your peer members and all the other stuff that goes with it. So this last sort of 18 months or so has probably been the closest I've ever been to being a full-time athlete. That doesn't mean that the amount of training I've done has increased, but it means that the amount of food prep, the amount of recovery time, the amount of ability to sleep. Like I don't have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning anymore. And I genuinely think that's the biggest reason that I've improved this year is like I'm getting 8 hours of sleep a night. So in terms of like a long winded answer, which you'll get a lot of from me, I guess. I'm looking at I tended to train twice a day, 5 days a week. And then I'll do something relatively active on those other 2 days, which will either be a swim, a fun workout that we just chuck something on the whiteboard and see how our body's feeling. That's not going to beat us up, low impact training. Or even just like a long hike at Penavan or a little jog or something like that. You know, I don't have many rest days. That's more from a mental side of things than anything. But I don't hammer myself all week, every week. It's very periodized in terms of my training. It's like off season is very much lift heavy and gymnastic skill work and low sleep aerobic conditioning. And then as we start ramping up into the season, the CrossFit starts really.
Yeah. So I find that sort of, you know, quite interesting that, you know, you're training every day, obviously, which is, you know, your body's sort of adapted to that. There's been some chat around, like, because you've been in the game so long, your like base level of fitness, like your minimum effective dose to stay at an incredibly high level is, yeah, you don't have to, or, you know, for lack of a better term, you don't have to do much to stay at better than the rest of us. So do you take like a proper periodized approach to your, like, you know, you've got a competition coming up. Will you and your team go through like an 8 to 12 week block where you like really turn it on, or is it just kind of like small manipulations throughout like a greater plan?
Yeah, good question. We certainly have an off season, like in terms of that, like where we'll go away and I program for all four of my athletes on the team. Like myself and the other three athletes on the team. And our programs in the off season will look very different. So like Owen will go and do a lot of pressing work. I'll do a lot of upper body pulling work. Charlotte and Maddie will do a lot more squatting work and lower body strength work and Olympic lifting work. And we'll work on individual weaknesses. And we might have one, maybe 2 days a week where we dip a little bit of Metcon in just to give you that dose. But everything else will be pretty low, slow. Like I'm talking an hour plus on a rower, ski erg, assault bike, bike erg, or running and swimming to just maintain and increase that aerobic capacity without you getting too much of a metabolic response that's going to take away from the strength work or the skill work and detract from the CNS. And then now with the new season, as it is, it was a little bit different in the sanctional season because we were competing a little bit more regularly. With the new season as it is, it's very much a case of we'll start to ramp in a little bit of CrossFit work about 6 weeks out from the open. So the open, we're still very much dipping our toe in and not anywhere near our full like potential in terms of our CrossFit performance. The semi-final, the quarterfinals, then we'll have been another 6 weeks further on and we'll train through the open as normal. The open workouts will be one piece of our training day that day. We'll do them once and get through them because you only need to get to the next stage. That's the hardest thing with the girls is trying to get the ego out of the way where they're like competing with each other and like used to being one of the best in the UK. And I'm like, this year I came like fucking 40th in the UK. It's like one of my worst ever finishes. And it's like, doesn't matter. We just need to get to the next stage and it's clean slate. Quarterfinals will then ramp things up a little bit again. And as we're doing this each stage, our programs start to align and become more and more and more similar to the point where the 6 weeks between the quarterfinals and the semifinals, we were all doing the same program because we were all peaking for CrossFit for the things that we thought were going to come up in the semifinals. And then the 6 weeks between the semifinals leading us into the games now, we're all doing the same stuff, but it's very much more swimming based, running based, sled pushes, handstand walking, peg boards, all the shit that the random stuff that we haven't necessarily got to do all year round. But if you can't do it, you're going to see your ass in the games, right?
Yeah, that's, and again, I think for a lot of people listening to this, it's probably the, you know, I don't think a lot of people realize how much goes into being fucking good in programming for the best. Like you've got to tick off so many boxes. There's so many things you need to improve on. What would you say like are the basics you have to nail?
So to get competitive in CrossFit, like they're very good at bringing out like a curveball every year, like it's something new, certainly at the games level, but they're starting to do it more and more. Like you always see a brand new movement every open. That's a given. But you also see a standard of movements that you're going to see every year.
Yeah.
So if you want to get competitive in CrossFit, you've got to reverse engineer where you want to be. So if your goal is to qualify for the quarterfinals this year, right, then that means that the Open is your competition and qualifying for the quarterfinals is the bonus, right? Doesn't matter how you get on the quarterfinals. My goal is to qualify for the quarterfinals. So what do I need to do to be good at the Open? Well, you know that you're going to get thrusters. You're going to get chest to bar, toes to bar, handstand push-ups, rowing, wall balls, double unders, like a handful of these movements that are non-negotiable, that are quote-unquote skills, but you need to be able to do them under fatigue. So if you can't do any of those movements, firstly, you need to learn how to do them. Then you need to bring some volume to those movements, so you need a minimum requirement. So as a ballpark figure, you need to be able to perform 50 chest to bars in a fatigued state in a workout in a 10-minute window, something like that. So start off with something like an EMOT. Can I do 5 chest to bars on the minute for 10 minutes? Tick. Cool. Can I do 5 chest to bars and 20 double unders every minute on the minute for 5? Tick. Cool. Let's bring that down to 9 minutes, to 8 minutes. Can I increase the intensity now? And now can I do them under fatigue? Once you start seeing these patterns and start being able to do these skills under more and more and more fatigue, then you start looking at the quarterfinals, because you know that you're going to get through that first stage. Because even if they chuck something different at you, like a pistol, well, cool. As long as you are capable of that skill, the capacity that you developed by squatting, by doing thrusters, by doing wall balls, by doing all these other things, as long as you haven't got a massive imbalance or an inability to perform that, it's not going to throw you too far off.
Yeah. Super interesting.
Yeah.
It's good to know there's a method to the madness, mate, you know?
Well, it is interesting, but I think once you listen, and obviously a lot of our listeners won't be elite athletes, but you listen to it and you go, okay, 5 a minute for 10 minutes. Yep, done. Add some double unders, possibly. Done. I can keep going with this shit. It's like, it becomes extremely difficult. You know, the difference between an athlete of your caliber and even an athlete at our caliber, and then a lot of people below, it's so vast. I really don't think people understand the vast difference between elite CrossFit athletes and general foe. We had Simone Arthur on here, who was looking to make it to the games this year as a female competitor. She said, but she didn't.
Just missed out.
I think she may become sixth or something here. And we're just talking to her about her day and her level of intensity and what it actually takes to become. But you would have had the question, obviously being a gym owner, people would have come in and said, hey, I want to go to games. You know, what do you say here to them?
How long you got?
Yeah.
Right.
Like most people turn around and say they come in. You'll see this all the time. We had it all the time. And it's like, I would never turn around and say to anyone, you can't get to the games.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's not my place, right? Even if they're completely genetically inferior, they've got a fucking 12 kids, they sleep 2 hours a night and they live on Reese's Pieces, right? Like anybody within reason has got the ability to get better. Like, it's just how long you want to stick with it and keep getting better for.
Yeah.
So if somebody comes into me and says, cool, I want to get to the games, like, well, that's not a smart goal. Like, give me a proper target. I want to get to the games in 3 years' time. Cool. We'll reverse engineer from there. To get to the games, you're going to need to be able to do X, Y, and Z. And where are you? Well, you can't do A, B, and C. So before you even worry about getting to the games, we need to be able to get you to do every movement. If you can do every movement, we then need to build your capacity in every movement. When you can get some capacity in every movement, we then need to be able to you to do them under intensity when you're fatigued. And then we can start talking about putting you in your first competition, let alone get into the games.
It's a tough one.
It's just, you've got to be realistic with things, right?
Yeah, because that bar is constantly moving up. That ability to get there is getting harder and harder every year. I mean, back in the day, you'd go to comps and every RX was 60 kilos. You'd be like, right, 60 kilos, all right, we got this. Now you go to competitions, it's like fucking 80, 100 kilos, like basic work. You're just like, no.
If you could snatch.
I mean, I was one of the first guys in the UK to snatch 120 kilos.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
2015, 2000, maybe something like that.
And that was like game standard. That's like, everyone's like, holy shit.
That would have been like top 5 in the games that year, right? Like, that was mental. And if you can't snatch 120 kilos now, you ain't getting to semifinals.
Yeah. Yeah.
No chance. Like, unless you are shit hot at everything else and that is your only weakness, right?
Yeah.
Like, you've got no chance. Like, if you're not clean and jerking close to 160 kilos now, you're finishing bottom half in a semi final in a team jet ladder.
Yeah. That's very, very true. Like, you know, obviously there's something incredibly rewarding about fulfilling and unlocking your genetic potential. And obviously that delayed gratification approach you have to stick at this for so long to keep getting better and see that progression. But I always like asking the top tier athletes we have on, like, what is your why? Like, why are you doing this?
I mean, the very big thing for me, and it sounds really cheesy, is I enjoy it. Yeah. Like, CrossFit filled a competitive void for me that rugby left almost instantly. There's no better feeling. Like, I love progress. I feel like if I'm not getting better, then I'm getting worse, as far as I'm concerned, in anything. And that's just my mindset, as the way I was brought up. It's like, you know, I want to continuously push the boundary as far as I possibly can. And for me, that led me to compete. And that was not necessarily as much as I love the feeling of competing, I love winning, and I love the competitive drive of things. But competition is a barometer for me to show my improvement. And if I go out there and I come second, but I've absolutely smashed every single workout the way that I wanted to smash it, I'll leave with the biggest smile on my face. I could win a competition and like performed poorly, and I'll be the guy kicking cat across the room when I get home. Like, yeah. So for me, like, my why is definitely progression based. It's like, cool, I can do 10. Why can't I do 11? Let's try. Cool. Yeah. I can do 11. Why can't I do 11 with a weighted vest on? Cool. I can do 11 with a weighted vest on. Let's do that with something else. Like, what's next? What's next? What's next? And it definitely helps having the business, like the athlete program and my athletes and everything else. Like, a lot of my why when training gets hard now is that because I'm letting my athletes down and my teammates down if I'm not doing the work, you know, on those shit days when you're literally just staring at us, like doing 10 1,000 meter rows with a 2 minute rest in between is fucking soul destroying. Like, it's boring, it's horrible, but every rep I'm just like, cool, I'm getting better because of this. And when this now comes up in a competition, I'm going to be able to lead my team through this, or I'm not going to be the one holding my team back.
Yeah. You spoke about like like briefly just on the mental suffering side of things. And I think to be at the level you're at, you need to be a certain level of crazy or just be comfortable with suffering. Like, is there anything specific you do to develop your mental strength, or is it purely just exposure and familiarity with stress?
Look, I'm not going to be that guy that turns around and said, I've never tapped out of a workout. Oh yeah. You know, weakness is fucking, or pain is weakness leaving the body and all that sort of shit. Like, like everybody's been there. Like, I've tapped out workouts. Like, I've been the guy that's walked out of a room and just been like, fuck this, not today. Like, I haven't got this today. But I'll also be the guy that the next day comes back in and says, fucking, I'm going to work twice as hard because of yesterday. Like, it's a matter of, 100% it's a matter of exposure, and it's a matter of breaking ceilings, breaking those glass ceilings. Like, if you put a boundary on something, you think like, fuck, like, I've rode a marathon 4 times.
Yeah.
Because right. It's like, that's a good way to spend 3.5 hours of like, cool, if I can do this, then I'm not enjoying this. I'm not doing it for any other reason. Like it's something that in the build up to the CrossFit Games, to the semi-finals, I hurt my back in the open, and I put on a little bit of weight. I had like 3 weeks where I was near enough bed bound during the open, and the only thing I did was the open workouts and the odd bit of fizz to just keep myself moving. And I put on like 2 or 3 kilos because I was still eating like I was eating but not training. So I rode I bikered 30K every day for 30 days and lost 4 kilos. I was like, the only reason I'm not doing this is because I'm choosing not to do it. Like, if you want something bad enough, if you decided, like I said to everybody during this season, when we were like, when people were like, oh, if you get to the games, and I said, when?
Yeah.
When we get to the games, not if. And that's not me being cocky. Like, that's me believing that we're going to go. Like, I don't think it's going to be easy. I think it's going to be fucking hard, but I also believe we're going to go. But yeah, when we get to the games, and if I'm telling people that, I'm a cunt if I don't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just pure mental.
And the only reason I'm not doing it is because I'm choosing not to.
Yeah. There's just so much resilience in it. Obviously, you said the program for all your team, but you obviously don't live near each other. You know, and I think for you, obviously, you just mentioned that's probably your driving force, not letting them down. Because I know when people do train at their own, they think they're training at the intensity that they want to, but they're just not, and they're just not able to.
The other thing is with programming, obviously, it just made me laugh a bit when you say you're tapping out, but you program a lot for yourself. John does a lot of our programming here, and I used to do the workouts that he used to program, and I used to just be like, fuck, right, we need to change this, need to change that. How many times do you program in the middle of a workout and you're just like, fuck, I've made a mistake here?
Yeah, it does happen. It happens less and less.
Yeah.
The more experience you get with it, and the more you've got to convince yourself that this is where you need to be. Like, it's rare that I'll program something. I sometimes think, oh, that was too easy, but in that case, you can always go harder, right? Like,
yeah.
I'd rather make something simple and like, oh, okay, well, I'll just go unbroken and fast, because that's never fun, right? That just hurts. But from the workout side of things, like in terms of, oh, okay, that was probably too hard. Yeah, sometimes I've turned around where I've written a 5-round workout and I'm like, nah, 3's enough. Like, we've got what we need out of this workout. Yeah. Like, that's the stimulus that I was looking for. It's become detrimental now. I'm going to start failing reps at this barbell, or I'm going to start, you know, ingraining some bad movement patterns here. If it's just as simple as rowing and warbles, I'll very rarely tap out, because it's like, there's no reason, I'm not getting worse for this. It's just horrible. But if it's something where, like, I've put a barbell that's too heavy in at the end of a workout, like, from a CNS point of view, I don't want to learn how to fail 140 kilo clean 5 times at the end of a workout. Like, if that's too heavy for me today, then that's too heavy for me today. Like, sometimes I'll get people to scale the weight back a little bit, or I'll turn around and be like, yeah, I've written 100 kilos on these and 90's fine for me today. That's getting what I need out of the workout. And it's understanding, anybody can chuck some movements and some numbers on a whiteboard and give somebody what they feel is a good workout. But it's understanding the stimulus that you want from that workout. Am I trying to get better at this? Am I trying to get better at that? Am I building resilience in this movement? Am I trying to hang on under fatigue in this movement? Am I trying to do this relatively fresh and build that skill and then attack a weakness, whatever that is? And if you understand why you're doing it and actually think about why you're doing it, rather than, oh, I'm going to use 21:59 because that's what we use, that's a cool rep range that people can appreciate, or no, I'm not going to do 21 ring muscle ups because that's going to affect this, so I'm going to do 9, 10, 26 because 26 is like one less than my best bar muscle ups or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm going to hang a dangling carrot of a number that is specific to me to get me better.
Yeah, it's such a mature answer that I think needs to go from the top all the way down. You know, you're only as good as what you're doing to fatigue. I know we still use them, but started taking like a lot of our RX out of our workouts and explaining the stress that you're trying to get instead, so people can start making their own decisions. And Sean always said, it's quite funny, people go, what's the RX? He's like, well, how much can you lift? He's like, well,
what do you think you can do?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I don't know. I was like, well, can you do 60 kilos, 50 kilos, 40 kilos, 45? Like, yeah, people, yeah. It's like,
no, I love that approach because you're building intuitive athletes, right? Like,
yeah.
I program remotely for, like you said, some of the best athletes in the world, like guys that are finishing top 100 in the world in the Open, guys that are going to the CrossFit Games. And it's like, they turn around and are like, oh, you haven't given me a weight for this workout. I was like, cool. You're right, I haven't given you this weight for this workout. Oh, well, why not? I was like, because I want you to choose the weight. Oh, well, should it be? But have you read the notes at the bottom? I want this to be fast and unbroken.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So what can you do fast and unbroken?
It's like someone, yeah. What do you say? I've often said, like, RX today is 140 kilos. It's like, oh, I can't do that. What can you do? Let's work it out. Yeah.
But you must get from that, like, that's supposed to be heavy, right? 140 kilos is supposed to be heavy. Like, I wouldn't find whatever it is, if it's deadlifts, I wouldn't find 140 kilos light, depending on the number of reps. So you turn around and you go, cool, I want this to be something that you can't just rattle through unbroken. You need to think about every rep. You need to brace. You need to get this right and then go gung-ho on this bit. Get your intensity from there. Like, but this is supposed to be a sticking point. Like, and then they'll learn themselves. And cool, they might go a little bit lighter. Get a training diary. Next time, go heavier. Like, learn from that. Yeah. Oh, I went a little bit too heavy. No problem. We'll take a little bit of weight off, but at least you tried and now you know.
It's like that. You know, again, I love that you're saying this, because it's conversations we have like so often with so many people, because, you know, we think it's a simple thing that everyone should know, but, you know, I've never been exposed. I don't know what's going on. Like, we have a bigger sort of conditioning piece on Wednesdays. And I think that was originally off one of the templates that you gave me. But yeah, just a longer style conditioning day, and people, you know, you got to set the tone. In essence, like a 30-minute conditioning piece is equivalent to, say, like a 10-kilometer run. You don't treat a 10-kilometer run like you do a 400-meter sprint. Like, you need to choose your loads and approach accordingly. Like, if you go gun-ho in the first 60 seconds, this is going to be a really, really bad day.
Both of you guys done 7 minutes of burpees?
Yes. Yeah, many times.
Yeah. Like, it's a workout that we repeated in the box relatively, not regularly, but, you know, certainly once, maybe twice a year, we'll put it in there as a benchmark, see if people are getting better, getting fitter. How many people go out on the 7 minutes of burpees and hit like 20 burpees in the first minute and then fucking pick up a fridge?
Yeah. Yeah.
What are most people's 2K row times in and around 7 minutes?
Yeah.
So if you jumped on a rower and you said, cool, what I want you to do is row the fastest 250 meters you've ever rowed and then beat your 2K pace. How many people are going to be able to do it?
Not many.
But stop being a fucking idiot and going off so hard on the burpees. Pace it like a 7 minute workout.
Yeah.
And that's how you teach people how to pace. But they need to draw that correlation themselves. You can lead them to the water, but you can't make them drink it.
No. Yeah, we have this conversation.
It's so much.
And I think, you know, if you are a better athlete, you'd run to save some energy for the end, maybe. But I've also had the conversation with, and I'd just be interested to see how you put it apart, especially with when you had a gym with more general pot people. Because I think once a lot of people start something like CrossFit and then they're quite naive to it. So they end up really enjoying it and just fucking themselves over because they're just so naive to what they do. They have no idea. And then the better they get, they get so stuck in the game planning aspect of things that they lose that enjoyment of it. So they need to find that. I'm like, you need to find that thing between naivety and the game planning and find this middle ground. So sometimes I will say in a workout, like say if it's 5 rounds, I'm like, right, these first 2 rounds go off hot. And then let's hang, or, you know, just mixing that stimulus up. But it's hard to get people to find that balance. Like, how do you get your athletes to find the balance between the two?
Yeah, I think like a big part of that, like I wish that I could go back to the naivety of when I was first training and just attack every workout with reckless abandon. Like I've got a mental handbrake now. Like I'm very good at pacing, which is why I'm good at competing. But it's hard to get better at fucking lactate thresholds if you overpace them, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I totally understand that. And I think from a two-headed approach, from a general pop side of things, I think you see so many people, like exactly what you said, where they'll come in every day and it's like, I need to be here every day to get better. I'm enjoying this. I get those beginner gains, those first 3-4 months where everything's getting better and better and better. And then they start seeing a sticking point. So they're like, cool, I need to come in every day and work on that. And it's like, the biggest thing I'll do again is give them a correlation. I was like, so say your one rep max snatch is 75 kilos. Is the best way for you to get a PB snatch to come in every day, put 76 kilos on a bar and try and snatch it? Probably not. What are you going to get good at? You're going to get really good at failing 76 kilo snatches, and you're going to get pretty good at fucking getting injured, I'd imagine. So why would you come in every day and try and hammer the ass out of a weakness when what I would do to break down a snatch is, I'd work on some pulls. I'd work on some block snatches or some hang snatches or some overhead squats. I'd find some things that I need to work on. So cool, you need to work on your toes to bar and I need to get better at conditioning. Cool, you can do some conditioning, but we're going to come in, we're going to do higher reps of knees to chest this day. We're going to do lower reps of strict toes to bar that day. And we're going to break up that skill into 3 sessions a week that are compartmentalized and get you better at something rather than that more is better approach.
Yep.
Better is better. Not more. Yeah. And that's a big thing from the general pop side of things. From the guys, then they get too good at it and then start overpacing and start like, and from an athlete point of view, the big thing that I'll do is I'll give them targets. So most stuff is either something I've either done in the past, I've given to one of my athletes before, or I've got a pretty good idea of what a good time would be based on correlations. But if I'm giving somebody a past or a previous semi-final, quarter-final, regionals, games, workout at those top high levels, I'm going to turn around and say, well, look, you want to be a games level athlete. Here is a good game score for this workout.
Yeah.
How are you going to get there? Show me, get there. Like, and that's how you teach people to pace a workout that, especially on a sprint, like something like a friendly Fran, Like, you ain't getting a 330 friendly Fran unless you go fucking hard and hang on. Like, it ain't happening. You can't break that 777 all the way through and get a good time. So suddenly you're like, well, yeah, but you told me you wanted to compete with these guys. They're figuring out on the day and they're going as unbroken as they can and maybe breaking the last set of thrusters because they can't hang on. Mm. Like, you need to know what that feels like. And then once we know what that feels like, then we'll get you better at hanging on.
Yeah. No, I love it. I think even from a scaling standpoint, you know, because you will have the recommended program for the day and then everything is obviously scalable within that. But we've started to just change the mic, like stop looking at scaling as something that is a bad thing to do. You know, if you're trying to
scaling create, is not failing.
Yeah, that's it. You're trying to gain a stress and a stimulus. It's like you don't need, it's not about the exercise selection in themselves. It's about, you know, what you're trying to create through that. So it's just trying to get people to really understand that, which is quite hard because, you know, so many people come in, it's like, hey, what's your goals? Like after they've been here like a year, they'll go, oh, I want to hit everything RX. I'm like, fuck.
Like, you don't get stronger from failing reps. I think that's a big thing. Like,
yeah,
especially with like a lot of cleans, people always tend to try and overreach rather than just like hit like win after win every rep. Just seeing that as a little like stepping stone to get heavier, they think, oh, if I don't hit this, I haven't made any progress. It was like, well, you could when you first started hitting 70 kilos, it was slow, it's sloppy, but now it's like crisp and faster. Like that is your progression. That is a massive win.
Yeah. I mean, like you work on Olympic lifting cycles and like working with Sonny Webster in the past and people like that. And it's like, I very rarely lift over 80%, but I've probably missed 4 snatches this year.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And then you go into the semifinals and we're going to snatch something. And I'm like, cool. I know I'm going to put 121 kilos on there and it's not going to be an issue. And then I'm going to put this on there and it's not going to be an issue. And it's like, because I know how to hit reps. I don't go in there thinking, oh, is this a good snatch day? Is this a bad snatch day? Is it going backwards, forwards? Am I taking steps? Am I doing this? Because what I've done is drilled good movement with 80%. And then when I've hit 100 snatches at 80%, suddenly I'll start going at 82%.
Yeah.
And when I've hit 100 snatches, and I don't mean that in a session, I mean that in a however many weeks it takes, you know? And yeah, people, it's the same principle. It's like people constantly want to put more and more and more on the bar. And again, more isn't better, better is better. That doesn't work necessarily just in terms of volume. That works in terms of weight. That works in terms of technique. That works in terms of recovery. Like, however you want to do things in life. Like, if you're not taking shortcuts by doing less necessarily. And I think that's people get good at CrossFit and it draws a certain type of personality, this type A personality of people that are buying into something because it's hard. People that like CrossFit are there for a challenge. Because the people that want to come there and have an easy workout, they don't hang around very long. They might stay there for a couple of weeks, a couple of months because they saw it on Netflix and think they're going to get abs. Mm. But the people that actually hang around and buy into it are the ones that are like, cool, this is hard. I'll be back tomorrow. Like, I want to get better at this. So to tell them that they need to do less, that's the hard thing to get through to them. But if you want to get better, it's not flogging away at this thing. You can do tons and tons of things more, but it's not the same thing. Work on some technique over here, work on an active rest, work on aerobic work, low, slow aerobic work. It's just become so taboo. Yeah. It's starting to become more and more of a thing now, but 3-4 years ago, you wouldn't see somebody sitting on a row for 5-6 hours a week. It wouldn't happen. Like, but that's how you get better. That's how you recover better from other workouts. You'll get better at fucking cleans because you're recovering better because you're spending more time on a row.
Yeah. I think we've spoken a lot about like how much smart programming, managing your training intensities are crucial to you getting better as an athlete. I know you spoke on it briefly at the touch at the start of the podcast about how sleep has been one of the best things for improving your performance. And I see you got a lovely little whoop strap there, which we're big fans of. I got rid of mine after a Christmas party and it told me I was like 1% in debt. I was like, I just don't need that right now. And I took it off.
I don't need that negativity in my life.
Oh, yeah. And I took it off and I haven't put it back on. But what are some of the biggest things you do for your recovery? And what are some of the biggest insights you've gained from your whoop strap?
I like the whoop. Like I for me, it's more of an analytical tool. Like I get a lot of people that will check their recovery and be like, oh, and I got to take it easy today because I'm only 62% recovered or whatever. And I'm like, what happens if that happens the first day of the CrossFit Games? You're just going to be like, oh yeah, I'm not going to go out today. well, no, like you've got to learn how to deal with that sometimes as well. And I'm not saying be irresponsible if you're not feeling great, if you're whatever. You need to listen to your body sometimes as well, because it's an easy way to pick up niggles and pick up injuries. But for me, from an analysis point of view, and certainly from an accountability point of view, it's helped me with my sleep, because you can't lie. Like, you wake up in the morning, it's like you've only slept 7 hours. Cool. I need to get better. I need to get to bed sooner, or I need to wake up later, or I need to check my little journal I fill in on Whoop. And is it because I had caffeine too late? Is it because, you know, I'm sleeping in a different bed? Is it because I'm not wearing an eye mask? You know, all these things that, like, I do now, genuinely the weirdest person to sleep with in the world, because I wear earplugs, an eye mask. I have a fan in my room, so it's like cold in my room and cool. I've got blackout curtains in there, so it's pitch black. Like, because I've realized how important sleep is for recovery. Like, I've had CrossFit Games level athletes that when I started working with them were struggling to get 6 hours sleep, and they started getting hours of sleep and they got accused of taking drugs because of the improvements they saw.
Yeah.
Like, because they got that much better when they were already good, that people were like, what are you fucking taking? It's like, I'm taking an extra 2 hours of sleep a night.
Yeah.
Like, genuinely. And like, I've got a strict policy of working with people and being completely like, honest with each other. And if, you know, like, if you're dealing with certain stuff and I don't believe you, I think that you're cheating, I'm not going to work. I don't want to fucking do all that shit.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't want to be associated with that. I don't want to get into the ethics or the reason behind that. Everyone's got their own reasons. But like, I've genuinely seen that much of an improvement in athletes that are already good because of sleep. And simple supplementation, like adding things like high quality omega-3s, vitamin D3, zinc and magnesium, like basic stuff. I'm not talking rocket science. I'm not talking like, is this cheating? Is this like going to be banned soon sort of stuff?
Yeah.
Like, because this is worth too much. It's just simple, like vitamins and minerals and improving sleep.
The basics work, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The basics do work. And they're like, they've hung around for a long time for that reason. Yeah. And the other thing is stress is, you know, not having the gym has obviously, there's been stress around COVID. There's been stress around the other businesses, but, not dealing with other people's stress day in, day out. Like, you'll get this a lot, you know, fucking Susie and her boyfriend are both members of the gym and they've had a fucking row, or
yeah,
Tommy's fucking shagging the milkmaid or whatever. Like, that gets around and that falls on you to deal with, even if you're not dealing with it, like not necessarily even putting out fires. You're stopping the match coming into the room because you don't want the fire to happen in the first place, but that's stressful for you.
100%.
And your body can't differentiate between the stress that you're choosing to put it under and the stress that you're not choosing to put it under. And it all takes an equal amount of energy and resilience from your body to bounce that stress off. Right. So you need to alleviate as much of that as you possibly can if you're genuinely considering being a top level competitor.
Yeah. I think people underestimate how difficult it is to like cultivate a culture and keep it on track. You know, I think what you said about the Whoop, I think it allows you to be, obviously we've had it, it allows you just to be a lot more conscious in what you're doing and your decision making. But I think people they don't really understand HRV and recovery standpoint. Like, athletes on game day aren't going into it with full green. You know what I mean? Even like MMA fighters, for example, I remember listening to a podcast with, I've been the fight dietitian, where he said, you know, a lot of them are going to come in on red. It doesn't mean that they can't perform at their absolute peak. It just might take them longer to recover post, you know, post performance. So you can always pick it up. There's always something. So again, it's just building that sort of resilience to allow you to take you there.
Mm-hmm. And I was just
I like the little bit of the Jocko Willink sort of thing as well. It's like, sometimes I'll turn around and be like, one of my athletes turns around and goes, oh, you know, I'm red recovery. And it's like, good.
Yeah.
You need to learn how to do that on a day when you're feeling shit. Like, you know, you play high level fucking sport. Like, you know, we all have, and you have days where you don't feel great. And it's like, well, suck it up, buttercup. You're getting on the field. So you've got to do your job. And
do you think
the 14 other guys on your team give a shit that you've got a fucking headache or that your fucking left wrist is a bit sore or whatever? It's like, strap it up and get on with it. You know?
Yeah. I've told that to a few of my rugby boys that, you know, they, a couple of them had whoops and they get hung up. It's like, oh shit, I'm on the red today before game day. I used to say, just take it off or don't check it before you play. You don't need that sort of in your head. But as we touched on earlier, you made it to the CrossFit Games, which is an incredibly phenomenal achievement. So know how long you've spent working out, like a decade of hard work and setbacks and growth and overcoming all sorts. So obviously it's must be incredibly rewarding, but an exciting time for you. Like, what are you looking forward to most? And probably like dealing with the uncertainty around like COVID, like fuck, it could all blow up and your flights could get cancelled, like touch wood.
Oh mate, like genuinely, like the last 2 weeks of training, actually the last week has been okay. The previous 2 weeks to that of training since the semifinals have been shit because of exactly the things I was just talking to you about, because of the stress of stuff that's out of my control. Like,
have you backed stress off? About, you worried about like...
No. We're training for the games. So like I've told the guys and I've tried to plate as much of that as I possibly can on my plate so that it's not affecting them. But I'm like, we're going one way or another. We're going to get there. There's ways of us getting there in terms of like we were looking at potentially having to go out to Mexico for 14 days because you're not allowed into the States from the UK because we're on their blacklist, but you're allowed in there from Mexico and we're allowed into Mexico from the UK. So I've turned into like a fucking US immigration lawyer for the last fucking 4 weeks. So I was like, yeah, there's ways of us getting there. So one way or another, leave that with me. I'll get it sorted. You carry on and train. I'll just deal with this in the background, turn it into a prawn on my computer screen. And that stress like of CrossFit saying that they've applied for this national interest exemption for us, that we're all going to be allowed into the States, and then turn around and saying, well, we still haven't heard anything. So if you've got a plan B, then you might have to start looking at your plan Bs. And then I was like, well, when are you going to hear something? Because our plan B means we're going to have to leave on the 10th because we need to be there 14 days before and we need to be out there at least 2 days before we get there and reverse engineering that. So there was a lot of moving parts. But luckily, we've got our exemption through. We've got our Esters, the flights are booked, the accommodation's booked. So this last week has been a lot more cool. I can focus on us getting a little bit better. Fine, I've not done a lot of getting better in the last 2 weeks, but you know, we were good enough to get there. So at least we know we belong there. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
What did it? Sorry. Like, I'm just obviously a decade is such a long time to train at a certain level and intensity. When you're, like you said, you're constantly trying to get better because you've not hit your overall goal of getting to the games yet. And you've done it on your 10th year. Like, what did it feel like to actually, you know, get the spot? I get excited thinking about it to some extent. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Just, yeah.
Honestly, relief. Like, okay. Like that sounds a bit fucking weird, but it's like, I've known for a long time that I'm good enough to get to the games. And I say me, I'm a team athlete. Like, I think that needs to be caveated. Like, I'm not being this guy that's like, oh yeah, I'm a CrossFit Games athlete. I'm a CrossFit Games team athlete. They're very different things. They're equally impressive in their own right, but it's a different sport.
Yeah.
But we, the collective, we have been trying to get there for a very long time. And I've known for at least 3 years that we're good enough to be there. So for me, that would have been a really frustrating thing to have that asterisk next to my name to basically be one of the best teams to never make it. We went to 4 sanctionals and we finished 2nd at all 4 of them. In the sanctional format, we were one place off getting to the games 4 times. 4 different teams in 4 different countries. Yeah. Beat tons of super teams that were stacked full of individual games athletes. So like, I knew we're good enough. I know that we're good enough to go there and do well. Like, not just make up the numbers. Like, my goal for the games, and I don't mind putting it out there, is to have the best ever European team finish, which was 10th. So I want to finish inside the top 10 as a rookie team. And I want to go back next year. And if and when we get top 10 this year, I want to go back next year and I want a podium. So it's a massive relief to say that I've got a bit of a monkey off my back in terms of knowing that we were good enough and questioning myself as to, is it because of me that we haven't got there for any reason? Have I not been doing the right programming? Have I not been giving the people the right work? Have I not been managing the team? Have I not been a strong enough leader? Whatever. A massive relief, but also a great sense of achievement. I'm really proud. Really proud.
Yeah.
Well, I think you're definitely a leader. You know, you're saying you've missed out four times by coming second. You know, for some people that would be enough. You know, and even to keep your team together. I gather you and your team have been together for how many years?
So Charlotte and I are the only two that have been constant across the whole three seasons. The two guys that are competing with us this year were both the games will be their first live competition with us, but they've been with us for the whole of this year.
Yeah.
So I've coached both of them through individual sanctionals and stuff. But obviously with the ways it was with super teams was that we had a girl from Canada, we've had a girl from Norway, we've had other guys that were living in different countries, like the old guys that I coached that all wanted to go there and go team. And with this new format, the four of us all live, me and Owen have moved up from Wales to Aylesbury to live here. So we're all working out this gym and living here and training together and, you know, bought into the whole process to do it the right way. And it's like, it's pretty cool. Like, I don't know, plug anything, but we've got a YouTube channel and we followed the journey right the way through it. And we did a little documentary series of the three semi-finals days.
That was sick.
On the YouTube channel. Yeah, it was cool, eh? And watching that back, I've not really had time to reflect on anything. So I've just been focused on the next thing, as we spoke about earlier. Like, now I'm focused on the games and getting everyone there and doing the best that we can. That's the first time where I've, in a long time, that I've turned around and said, I can't wait to watch that back in 10 years' time with my kids and just be like, yeah, that's what we did. And that's how we did it.
Yeah. Man, it's so cool talking to someone who's just so, like, has so much passion for what they do, and to see people achieving it. The high level is always, you know, inspiring. Like, you see, like, to have those setbacks, like, people give up from, like, minimal shit. And to be so close so many times and to get back up and go again, like, you know, it's so powerful, and it's a credit to you as a leader and, you know, an athlete, and to your team as well. Like, it's fucking sick. Not to big you up too much, man, because I know you got a big head already.
Yeah, very, very.
So last couple of questions. No, I appreciate it. Because I think everyone wants to know, because it is curious. Everyone does want to know, what is it like a typical day for you on average? What's a typical day? I think it's good to put into perspective.
Yeah, yeah. So I get up a lot later than I used to now, which is cool. I normally get up around about 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning, which is for you guys probably out of a lie-in.
I couldn't do that when I'm hungover. It's fucked.
Like, putting that in perspective, when I used to go in the gym, we used to open at 5:15. So I was at least 2, maybe 3 days a week, I was up at 4:45. So that's nice, just having an extra 3-4 hours in bed that way.
It's crazy, right? I just want to say, too, obviously being from the UK, 5:15 in Australia and 5:15 in Wales are two very fucking different beasts. I went home for a month at Christmas. Obviously, here I'm a fit guy, my identity is a train. I couldn't, mate, there's no chance I was doing it. It's terrible.
-3 in the snow and like pitch black to go and let a load of lunatics into your gym at 5:30 in the morning. It's not fun.
Touching a barbell was just terrifying. It was freezing.
Getting frostbite. Yeah.
The coffee shop here at like 5:30. It's ridiculous. Yeah. They don't open till like 7 o'clock, 8 there.
Yeah, it's freezing there, eh, Sean? Yeah, it's like 15 degrees. Fuck off, man. yeah, we had a heat wave and it was 12 degrees here, so don't worry about it. Yeah, so I get up like 7:30, 8 o'clock. I will normally do my cardio sessions fasted in the morning. So I'll take my vitamins and minerals and like a Barocca, I don't know if you have that over there, like an effervescent multivitamin drink or whatever. And then I'll do my cardio stuff, which is normally anywhere between an hour and 90 minutes long, which is just normally in the off season, that'll be one or two machines, intervals at steady state, like stroke rates and stuff like that. During this part of the season, maybe two sessions a week will look like that, and two sessions a week will be a bit more mixed modal, where I'll put double unders and burpees and some low impact gymnastics and stuff like that in those sessions.
Sorry, can I just interrupt again? Just because I'm purely interested, and obviously a lot of our members are going to listen to this and they've just said that you obviously train fasted in the morning. So I don't want that question a gazillion times in my ear. Is that just from a metabolic flexibility standpoint? Is it the fact that you just don't like eating in the morning?
Yeah, personal preference. Yeah. So it's genuinely like I don't like doing my cardio with a full stomach and I want to get it out of the way pretty early on. So if I was going to get up, eat breakfast, I would have to let that digest for an hour or so before I trained, which means I wouldn't be training until probably 10 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. Whereas doing it this way, I can get my training started at 8:30. I'm done by 9:30, 10 o'clock, rather than starting at 10 o'clock. And then I can get on with my day and get my work done. So it's more of a personal preference thing rather than an intermittent fasting thing or anything like that. It's just I don't feel if I had like a tough metcon to do or a qualifier to do or anything like that in the morning, then I would tend to have breakfast before that.
Perfect. God, you got to about 8 o'clock and I've interrupted you twice.
No, you're good. After training in the morning, then I'll eat. I'm a very much creature of habit in terms of like obviously being a nutritionist and stuff, so I tend to plan out my nutrition and I'll eat pretty much the same thing every day for around 6 to 8 weeks and then tweak it and change it and then eat the same thing again for 6 to 8 weeks and just make these little changes. And I'm not super strict on that. Like if we're going to go out and have some food, that's fine, but like I'll tend to try and stick to that for the majority. So at the moment that looks like 135 grams of Swiss muesli, scoop of protein and some almond milk, an apple and a satsuma, post training, first thing. I'll then get a little bit of work done, whatever I need to in terms of Kraus, the athlete program, client calls, stop my guys having a meltdown because they failed some thrusters or something. I'll eat again then around 12 o'clock and I'll have the same thing again. So I'll have muesli again with protein, almond milk and another apple, another satsuma pre-training, which will be then my CrossFit session, which will be, again, depends on the season, but lifting, gymnastics, metcons, whatever. At the moment, it's just looking like more and more metcons with the odd, I lift heavy maybe once a week just to maintain. And we're focusing on just getting as fit metabolically as we can. And then post that training session will be my first, I guess, what you want to call a real meal, in terms of having, at the moment, it's chicken, broccoli, sweet corn, carrots, and herby new potatoes. Yeah. And I'll have the same thing. I'll have that twice. So I'll have that as a late lunch and as my dinner. Yeah. And then evenings are pretty much reserved for working with my overseas clients. They've got different time zones, doing a little bit of programming, maybe chilling a little bit in front of the telly, I've got a sauna at home. So I try and get in a sauna if I can, most evenings for 20 to 30 minutes in a nice hot temperature. If I can as well, and the weather's good, I'll go for a walk for half hour to an hour, listening to an audiobook or a podcast, and then come back in after that walk and jump straight in the sauna, shower, and then evening routine then.
Yeah. And I suppose this day is extremely different to the day when you, like I said, you were owning a gym and you had to fit all that thing in behind coaching and keeping people on track.
But mate, I know it's getting late there. It's probably what, 9:15 now. The sun is probably nearly close to setting.
It can't be far off.
Can't be far off. Our sun here is just about to rise. So mate, again, thank you so much for your time today. And I just get to, just as a final sort of wrap up, like where can people find out more about you? You know, you got your own podcast, YouTube, your different Instagrams, your programming, like you do a bit.
OnlyFans.
Yeah, OnlyFans. Yeah, that's the one. OnlyFan, I think. I just got the word.
It's just Sean.
Sean. Yeah.
You're welcome.
At Mike Kratos, because Kratos is the name of the nutrition company. So I'm at Mike Kratos on Instagram, Kratos Nutrition on Instagram, and The Athlete Program on Instagram. You can find anything you really need about me from there, like all the links to the YouTube and the podcasts and all the other good stuff as well. So, if you want to get in touch, and Sean will tell you, I'm pretty good at getting back to you. And if you need a chat about anything, I'll help. But you're in good hands with these guys, so I'm sure they'll help you first.
Yeah, man. Definitely. I think very, very keen to like personally know someone who's competing at the game. So it'd be for the first time in probably a few years, I'll watch close attention. Is there anywhere like, you know, can you, I know you got your supporter shirts and everything, is if anyone wants to jump on board with that, do you ship out to Aussie? I know it's probably short notice now.
We did it as a pre-order because we wanted all the guys to get their shirts for the games. So unfortunately they've been and gone in terms of the sales, but we'll come up with something. We want to come up with something after the games as a thank you to everyone. So we might bring out another t-shirt or might do something. But no, I appreciate you asking. I think that the biggest thing that we can ask is that just a little bit of support. It goes a long way, especially, you know, throughout the semi-finals and stuff, that people reaching out and dropping us messages it's been really cool. So it's just been nice to get some positivity in our lives after 18 months of fucking madness, really.
Mate, if you can just do me a favor and like whilst you're over at the games, just steal a bunch of kit and send it to me. No bull stuff's expensive, so.
It's going to be a bit big for you though, isn't it? It's going to be bagging off you.
Well, yeah, you've got catrice fits, so it's like extra tight on the arms and extra loose on the belly.
Extra medium. All right. Yeah. I really appreciate you coming on. I was fascinated by that conversation. I wish you all the best and your team all the best in the games. Go out, have some fun. Destroy it. We'll stick all your stuff in the show notes. But yeah, we can't thank you again, mate. Really appreciate it.
Mate, anytime. And I'd love to get back on it anytime you need me.
But post games, winning.
Post games.
All right, see you, mate.
Yeah. Cheers, mate. Take care.